good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on KBOO here in Portland, Oregon. My name is Andrew Geller, and today we're going to do one of those revisiting somewhat frequent topic shows, talking about space weaponry and U.S. plans to, again, their words, dominate the Earth from above. And joining me this morning to talk about this, as he has done a few times in the past, is Bruce Gagnon. He is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Nuclear Power and Weapons in Space. Welcome back to our airwaves, Bruce.
Good morning, Andrew.
Morning. And I just want to let folks know up front that Bruce will actually be here in town in a couple of days, speaking down at the First Unitarian Church Friday night from 6 to 8, and we'll do the whole details of like where that is and all that during the course of the show. So, Bruce, it's been a little while since I've had you on. I'm curious if you could just give us a kind of overview of what you think some of the most major developments regarding U.S. space weapon plans have been since then, and then we'll kind of veer towards what the administration has coming up in terms of new developments.
Well, I think those two things are connected. The Bush administration is just any day going to announce its new national space policy, which is basically going to be a green light to the Pentagon to move towards deployment of weapons in space for the first time ever. The key thing there is they're working on some new technologies, kinetic energy weapons, things that will smash into other countries' satellites. There's a program called Rods from God that has been reported recently that would actually fire weapons from space and hit targets on the Earth below. Another system that I think is really coming on strong within the Pentagon in terms of their interest is what they call the military space plane. Some people are selling it as the successor to the shuttle, except it won't have anything to do at all with space exploration. It'll be a first strike attack weapon system that would allow the Pentagon to quickly, from orbit, fly down. Imagine a shuttle that can fly in and out of orbit down to the Earth and back up again, a smaller version of it. It would be loaded with weapon systems and would allow the United States to launch preemptive first strike attacks on any part of the world, and they're particularly wargaming now, using that military space plane to hit China in a first strike attack. So that, in addition to Project Prometheus, the nuclear rocket with nuclear reactors for engines, these seem to be the systems that are moving forward as preferences within the Pentagon.
Now, as you mentioned, the administration is going to be coming out with a new doctrine regarding space policy. And in some of the stuff that I've read prior to the show today, it points out that nothing that the U.S. is pursuing makes any sense in terms of combating any of the countries the administration so frequently points out as the supposed real danger. Space weapon systems don't work against terrorist networks to the extent that they're the ones active and carrying things out we hear about. It doesn't really do anything to, North Korea or Iran, and that it's really targeting China, and to a lesser extent, maybe Russia or post-Soviet states. Can you tell us a little bit about how the U.S. is walking this sort of tightrope in the context of China, both kind of, wanting to work with them very proactively regarding economic efforts, but at the same time being very fearful that, in fact, that's the new big challenge, and the U.S. military, working to counter a different part of China?
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. It's kind of a schizophrenia. On the one hand, the capitalists want to trade with China. They want to have Chinese workers work for slave wages to build products. that can then be sold in Walmart very cheaply. But on the other hand, the United States wants to control China militarily. In 2000, there was an article in the Washington Post entitled, "To the Pentagon, Asia Moving to the Forefront." And the article said that the U.S. was going to double its military presence in the Asian Pacific region. For example, on Guam and Wake Island in the Pacific Ocean, the United States military has now lengthened and widened the runways on those two islands so the B-1 and B-2 bombers can be stationed there. Cruise missiles have now been pre-positioned on Guam, and they're going to expand the naval ports there as well, all giving it the military greater capability to begin surrounding China. One of the weapon systems that's also under development is what's called theater missile defense, TMD, or boost phase defense. And it would be outfitted on ships made not far from where I live here in Maine called Aegis destroyers. And they would be home ported in Japan, South Korea, in Taiwan, in Australia. And basically, the United States wants to create a coastal encirclement of China, remembering that today China only has 20 nuclear missiles capable of hitting the west coast of the United States, while we, of course, have over 7,500 nuclear weapons in our arsenal of hypocrisy. As we lecture the rest of the world, we invade Iraq, telling people they can't have nuclear weapons, but in fact, we are still building more new generations and now moving towards building Star Wars as well. So clearly the United States wants to control China because, as you say, they stand to become a major economic competitor. The war in Iraq, I would submit, is partially being done to control the oil. That Iraqi oil doesn't come to the United States. That Iraqi oil largely goes to China and to Japan and other countries in the Asian Pacific region. So if the United States can control Iraqi oil with permanent bases there in Iraq, turning the oil over to the big U.S. Oil corporations, then the United States will hold the key to the economic engine of China and be able to dictate terms to them. If you also look at the war on terrorism since 9/11, the invasion of Afghanistan, the setting up of bases in Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, where the United States is now stationed today, we've put a new Star Wars listening post into Kyrgyzstan as their dictator government has recently mowed down 500 people in the streets. The United States didn't say much about it. Why? Because we got this listening post in their country and we don't want to get kicked out. So if you look at a map, all the Central Asian bases that we're setting up today are on China's inland border. Mm-hmm. So we've moved to surround them on their inland border. We're now moving to surround them on their coastal region so that we can control China. And guess what? China said that if you go forward with all this ultimately, which we're moving to do, you're going to force us, China, to build more nuclear missiles.
Let's get to that in just 1 second. I want to continue with the encirclement of China concept. And you're right. If you do look at a map to the west across Central Asia, we have the entire western edge of China circled to the extent that we can. Now, on the eastern side, you've got the you've got several large bodies of water. But basically, to the east of China is Japan, which just so happens to have been militarily dependent on the United States for the past 60 or so years.
And the United States has 40,000 troops there today,
mm-hmm.
what we call our unsinkable aircraft carrier.
Now, you wrote an article earlier this month, about 2 weeks ago, Japan joins dangerous space race, and it looked as though it was based on articles in the Asia Times and Japan Focus, talking about how not only is Japan talking about kind of remilitarizing itself, which involves changing the constitution, but it's a way to continue its beneficial side of its military relationship with the U.S., because this is what the U.S. now wants. Do you think that the United States government will ultimately be successful in keeping Japan in control and having it work for us on the eastern side of China?
Well, you know, people that remember World War II remember that Japan was an imperial power that invaded China, Korea. Mm-hmm. It has a very bad record over the years. After the war, the United States forced Japan to come up with a constitution that said they would not have an offensive military. They would only have a defensive military. And so today the United States is twisting the arm of Japan to have them change that constitution that we originally forced on them to make them more military active in the region. The United States needs a military ally in the region for cover so that we can hide behind. So we're using Japan in that way. And my friends in Japan are telling us that Japan is now cutting its social programs, health care, other kinds of social programs in order to move money into Star Wars to join the United States in that whole program. And Japan will become then part of this military encirclement. Well, Korea, that's one reason why North Korea is building nuclear weapons, is because North Korea, or the Korean Peninsula, has been invaded and occupied by Japan before during World War II. Japan had a very bad human rights record when they killed innocent people by the thousands, and not only in Korea but in China as well. And so both China and Korea are very, very concerned about Japan's new militarization, and the United States is bringing back the old imperialists, if you will, the old militarists, bringing them back into power. So there are very alarming signals going on in the Asian Pacific region, and the United States is really behind all of it.
Now, as you mentioned, China said, if you guys keep pushing us militarily, it's kind of like a little Cold War with China now. We are going to take, as you know, rightfully they should, defensive measures to guarantee their own territorial defense and sovereignty. And I think this is a piece I got off of the Global Network's website, Bush's Larger Plan for Space, and there's a section called Arms Races Need Enemies. Paraphrasing the second paragraph under that, if China were to build more weapons, the American people might be willing to turn over Social Security, healthcare, and education funding so the military can spend more on missile defense to protect it from a quote-unquote aggressive China.
Yeah.
But how do we get China to go along? And then here's the surround China strategy. And, it's like it's sort of in plain view.
Yeah. And if China was to begin building more nuclear weapons, more than their 20 that they have today, the word would go out all over America that look what China's doing. Oh, my God. In fact, my sister is a Christian fundamentalist in Southern California. And about a year or two ago, I was visiting her. And she gave me a book that's being passed around in her church, and she showed me all the references to China in it. China's out to take over the world. China is the evil power that wants to send a nuclear attack on the United States. We must have missile defense to protect us.
Right, but never mind the fact that it's the United States national security strategy to talk about preemptive nuclear strikes on I don't even know how many dozen countries.
So the United States clearly is setting up China to become the next foil, to become the next enemy, and will use that to justify to the American people the need for more Star Wars programs to protect us from the nuclear weapons that China's building. I'll tell you a little story just to me that really well illustrates all of this. You might remember a couple of years ago that EP-3 Lockheed Martin spy plane of the United States that was bumping up along the coast of China, very slow, big, fat, propeller-driven plane. And, if we really wanted to spy on China, we wouldn't need that plane. We use our satellites to do it.
Right.
So this plane was really used to provoke an incident, slow, propeller-driven, knowing that it would be seen and caught and intercepted right along China's coast. And China scrambled two planes. They kind of bumped into each other. And then they brought the spy plane down onto Hainan Island. And the crew was held for a few days and then sent back to the United States. And then China took the U.S. spy plane apart, kept the good stuff, and then sent the rest of it home in crates. Well, today, on Hainan Island, the same corporation, Lockheed Martin, that built that spy plane, is today building a naval reconnaissance system for communist China on Hainan Island. And so the corporation, because of the tensions, because of the growing tensions between the United States and China, Lockheed Martin is making money on both sides of the street. So an arms race, a new arms race, will benefit these weapons corporations because they'll end up building stuff for both sides. That's what this whole thing is all about.
It's a grand old American tradition, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called corruption.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO. Bruce Gagnon's my guest. He's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Nuclear Power and Weapons in Space. And you can find out more about them and all the stuff they track online at www.spaceforpeace.org. And that's the numeral four in between Space for Peace. He's also coming here to the region. He will be speaking in Portland this Friday, the 29th, at the First Unitarian Church, which is downtown at Southwest 12th and Main. And it's 7 to 9 p.m., I've been told, not 6 to 8. So change your calendar too, Bruce. Let's see. Saturday the 30th, he will be in Corvallis. He'll also be in Florence on Saturday, Sunday in Eugene, Monday down in Salem, Tuesday out in Hood River, and a week from today in Olympia, and then heading north. And I'm sure if you needed... Actually, you know what I'll do? I will X out all these different phone numbers here, and I'll leave this up at the front desk for public perusal. And you also have a book out, Come Together Right Now. Before we get back into kind of current affairs type stuff, give us a taste of what Come Together Right Now is about.
It's a collection of stories over my 27 years as an organizer, starting first being in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, having been a young Republican for Nixon in 1968.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then making a transition while in the military during the Vietnam War to become a peace activist. So I start with those stories, and then I tell many different organizing stories over the years, working with the Farm Workers Union, working on social justice issues, working as a coordinator of the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice for 15 years, and then coordinating the global network that I do today. So lots and lots of really good organizing stories from throughout the years, stories about my travels. As I go on these speaking tours and go to various demonstrations or conferences in different parts of the world, I tend to write stories about them when I come back, and I send them out to my email list, and I get a lot of good response from them, and that's really what led to the book, people saying, you know, you ought to put all this together in a book, and so I've done it, and it's at the printer. It's actually in the mail between the printer and our office right now, and I'll have order forms there in Portland when I arrive.
Cool. Will it be available through other outlets aside from the Global Network?
You'll be able to order it off our website, and ultimately, at some point, you'll be able to get it through Amazon. You won't be able to get it today from Amazon, but ultimately you would be able to. But it actually would be cheaper to order it through us from our website. The book, on the cover of the book, there's endorsements from Dr. Helen Caldicott, Daniel Ellsberg, of the Pentagon Papers fame. He's one of my real inspirations. When I was in the Air Force, actually, reading the Pentagon Papers really helped to push me over the cliff. Helen and Daniel both endorsed the book and wrote nice endorsements on the cover.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on internationally in terms of trying to stop U.S. space weapons plans?
Well, it's been difficult because the United States, as everyone knows, isn't listening much to whatever people think around the world. But Canada and Russia and China continue to go to the United Nations Permanent Conference on Disarmament, located in Geneva, Switzerland, and continue to introduce a resolution calling for a global ban on weapons in space. You know, basically, let's close the door to the barn before the horse gets out. And the United States continues to refuse to negotiate a global ban on weapons in space. And that was not only during the Bush years, but in the Clinton years previously.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, we have to acknowledge that the Democrats have been fully supportive of the development of this Star Wars program, ultimately. And during the Clinton years, the Clinton administration refused to also negotiate a global ban on weapons in space. In my talk on this trip, I've come out with a new talk called Battle for America's Soul, and I end it with what I call a transformative vision for the peace movement. I'm telling people that America is addicted to war, addicted to militarism and violence, and if you look at America as cloth, that the early strands, the threads that wove our nation together were based on violence, genocide of the native people, introduction of slavery, the taking of significant lands from the from Mexico, rather, two wars with Canada to try to conquer Canada, although we failed in doing that, and then on and on and on. And we've been at war ever since. And today, if the peace movement was to miraculously end the war in Iraq today, by next year we would be in another war because our nation is addicted to militarism, to violence, and to military spending.
The
economy, most importantly, our local economies are addicted to military spending. So until we, the peace movement, begin to develop a new vision that we can sell to the American people, we're never going to end war. And that vision is around jobs. We have to talk about jobs because increasingly the number one industrial export of America today is weapons. And when weapons is your number one export, what's your global marketing strategy? So increasingly, American citizens have jobs building weapons. And until we can change that fact, we're not going to end war. I ask the question, why is it not possible with our tax dollars, because all these weapons are built with our tax dollars, why can't we begin to create a national movement and a national demand that we want to use our tax dollars instead of building weapons? We want to build solar. We want to build windmills. We want to build public mass transit systems, rail systems, connecting every corner of this country so that we can get out of our cars and stop using oil and stop depleting the ozone layer and stop mercury contamination of our rivers and lakes and streams where we can't even eat the fish anymore because of the pollution coming from a fossil fuel economy. Why can't we convert our economy, save the planet, get out of the arms race, end this endless war cycle? Why can't we people begin to create such a political demand? And I believe if we begin to really focus on that, I'm not saying stop organizing against the war, but I'm saying start connecting the war to this transformative vision for a future that will give us a real future, give our children and grandchildren a future on this planet. This is the only way out from behind this military madness.
Now, not to cast a wet blanket over your very nice rhetoric, but I think it's just fear. People are told that there's an enemy. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about a lot of this is the more vague these guys are and the easier it is for them. I mean, being vague is really easy. And the more vague they are, it seems like the more effective their strategy is of keeping people afraid and convincing people basically to work against their own self-interest.
But, you know, I don't think people are stupid.
No, I don't think they have all the information.
I think people know they're being sold a bill of goods. In all my years as an organizer, over 27 years now, I've never seen a time when people were listening as attentively as they are today. I've recently had the occasion to meet several workers from Bath Iron Works, about 10 miles from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
They're the workers building the Aegis destroyers that are being outfitted with theater missile defense systems. And in every single instance when I've talked to these workers, what they have told me is they don't feel good about what they're building. They have a real moral dilemma about it, but the pay is good. They don't really have any other job possibilities. Other jobs are moving out of this state. dramatically. Corporations are closing down, you know, the textile mills, the shoe factories, even the paper mills in Maine are closing down, and they're taking the wood overseas and processing it overseas. And so increasingly people feel locked in, and they don't feel like they have any other option. And if given the chance, if given the opportunity, they would rather be building something else. And so I think that's where we have to start. And if we give people an option and help create a political demand around an alternative economy, basically, then I think we can begin to reduce everything else that goes with it. I don't dispute with you that the Bush administration and the militarists use fear to scare the American people. They're trying to use China now, make us afraid of China. But I think the people know in their heart of hearts, they know what's going on because they've seen the game now long enough. They've figured it out. And there's enough of us out there talking and writing letters and holding demonstrations. The public has a good sense of what's going on. But I think they're locked in. They're job scared. And I think that's the biggest obstacle to progress in America today.
Bruce Gagnon is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Nuclear Power and Weapons in Space. He is speaking this Friday here in Portland at the First Unitarian Church downtown at 12th and Main in Southwest, 7 to 9 p.m. For more information, you can call 503-246-3464. Their website is www.spaceforpeace.org, and that's the numeral 4 in there. And you can get order forms for Bruce's new book, Come Together Right Now, at his speaking event in Portland or any of the others, or the website. Thanks a whole lot for joining us on People Rise Up again, Bruce.
Andrew, thanks once again, and you're always well prepared, and you really do a good interview. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Take care. See you Friday.
Good luck to you.
And so off he goes again. Bruce will be in Corvallis and Florence on Saturday, Eugene on Sunday, Salem on Monday, Hood River on Tuesday. If you want any more details on any of those locations, please give me a call down here at 503-231-8187. If you'd like to send any feedback, you can email me at kboo@riseup.net. And the People Rise Up website at www.kboo.fm has a whole bunch of links related to this and all other shows in the past 3 months. Thank you very much for listening.